Chapter 10. You would have expected this to have drawn some comment from me, such as, "Oh, my God," or, "You'll be my what?" But I remained sotto voce and the silent tomb, my eyes bulging like those of the fellows I've heard Jeeves mention, who looked at each other with a wild surmise, silent upon a peak in Darien. The thing had come on me as such a complete surprise. Her rejection of my addresses at the time when I proposed to her had been so definite that it had seemed to me that all danger from that quarter had passed, and that from now on we wouldn't even be just good friends. Certainly she had given no indication that she would not prefer to be dead in a ditch rather than married to me. And now this. Is any man safe, one asks oneself. No wonder words failed me, as the expression is. She, on the other hand, became chatty. Getting the thing off her chest seemed to have done her good. The glitter of her eyes was practically switched off, and she was not clenching her teeth any more. I don't say that even now I would have cared to meet her down a dark alley, but there was a distinct general improvement. "We shall have quite a quiet wedding," she said. "Just a few people I know in London, and it may have to be even quieter than that. It all depends on Father. Your standing with him is roughly what that of Public Enemy Number One would be at the annual policeman's ball. What you did to him I don't know, but I've never seen him a brighter move than when your name came up at the luncheon table. If he persists in this attitude, we shall have to elope. That'll be perfectly all right with me. I suppose many people would say I was being rash, but I am prepared to take the chance. I know very little of you, true, but anyone the mention of whose name can make Father swallow his lunch the wrong way cannot be wholly bad." At last, managing to free my tongue from the uvula with which it had become entangled, I found speech, as I dare say those Darien fellows did eventually. But I don't understand." "What don't you understand?" "I thought you were going to marry Orlo Porter." She uttered a sound rather like an elephant taking its foot out of a mud hole in a Burmese teak forest. The name appeared to have touched an exposed nerve. "You did you? You were mistaken. Would any girl with an ounce of sense marry a man who refuses to do the least little thing she asks him because he's afraid of her father? I shall always be glad to see Orlo Porter fall downstairs and break his neck. Nothing would give me greater pleasure than to read his name in the Times obituary column. But marry him! What an idea! No, I'm quite content with you, Bertie. By the way, I do dislike that name Bertie. I think I shall call you Harold. Yes, I'm perfectly satisfied with you. You have many faults, of course. I shall be pointing some of them out when I am at leisure. For one thing," she said, not waiting till she was at leisure, "you smoke too much. You must give that up when we're married. Smoking is just a habit. Tolstoy," she said, mentioning someone I had not met, "says that just as much pleasure can be got from twirling the fingers." My impulse was to tell her Tolstoy was off his onion, but I choked down the heated words. For all I knew, the man might be a bosom pal of hers, and she might resent criticism of him, however justified. And one knew what happened to people. Policeman, for instance, whose criticism she resented. "And that silly laugh of yours, you must correct that. If you're amused, a quiet smile is ample. Lord Chesterfield said that since he'd had the full use of his reason, nobody had ever heard him laugh. I don't suppose you read Lord Chesterfield's letters to his son?" Well, of course I hadn't. Bertram Wooster does not read other people's letters. If I were employed in the post office, I wouldn't even read the postcards. "I will draft out a whole course of reading for you." She would probably have gone on to name a few of the authors she had in mind, but at this moment Angelica Briscoe came bursting in. "Has he brought it yet?" she yipped. Then she saw Vanessa, added the word golly, and disappeared like an eel into mud. Vanessa followed her with an indulgent eye. "Eccentric child," she said. I agreed that Angelica Briscoe moved in a mysterious way her wonders to perform, and shortly after, Vanessa went off, leaving me to totter to a chair and bury my face in my hands. I was doing this, and very natural too, considering that I had just become engaged to a girl who was going to try to make me stop smoking, when from outside the front door there came the unmistakable sound of an aunt tripping over a doormat. The next moment, my late father's sister, Dahlia, staggered in, pirouetted a while, cursed a bit, recovered her equilibrium, and said, "Has he brought it yet?"